We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
92.9 Podcasts, powered by Action 24/7, Tennessee's only local legal sportsbook. Bet now at action247.com. 92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parrish Show.
Here, my name is Gary Parrish. I'm speaking to you from Memphis, Tennessee. Bennett Doyle's producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day best you can. For University of Memphis overload on a Friday night. Penny Hardaway's Tigers on the court. Ryan Silverfield's Tigers on the field. Memphis Western Kentucky basketball.
I'm ready.
At home. Memphis Houston football on the road. Tip off at 7, kickoff at 8. Looks like we know how we're spending our Friday night. Thank God I'm going to preview and spoil Dateline so you don't have to waste time watching that.
It's a good Dateline.
Think it is.
Okay, because I'll be honest, 2020 is coming hard tonight.
What are they trying to do?
They're doing, remember that family, the parents that like had the kids like chained up and were like, you know, they lived in like a torturous home. Remember that? It was a big story. I think it was in California. And Diane Sawyer has the children being interviewed tonight.
So, tough competition.
Tough competition tonight. Hope Dateline's coming through.
Wait till I tell you about Dateline.
Ooh.
I had to spend extra time studying today. So I could properly prepare to preview Dateline and spoil Dateline. We'll talk about our Friday night momentarily. First, though, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. 4:20, Dan Walker is going to join me, national columnist, USA Today. He had an interesting column on a interesting situation developing in China. Peng Shuai, who is a women's tennis player from China, a few weeks ago, publicly stated that she was sexually assaulted by a former Chinese official. And now she's missing.
Yikes.
And so the tennis world is obviously concerned and threatening to pull out of China, which is where, especially the women's tour, makes a whole lot of money. This is becoming a real international situation. Dan Walker knows about it better than I. Wrote a column for USA Today. So I'll talk to him, sure, about normal college football stuff. But this is a story that is starting to gain real traction in this country. We'll talk about it with Dan Walker. He's going to be here in the next segment. When I finish it, I'll take a break, come back, do four notable stories at 4:44, at which point I'll discuss four previously undiscussed stories, among them the Grizzlies beat the Clippers last night. 120-108, Ja Morant got 28. The Grizz are back above 500. We'll get into that around 4:44. The big NBA game tonight, Lakers-Celtics. Our king, LeBron James, will be a game-time decision, but is expected to play. He's only appeared in 6 of the Lakers' 16 games so far this season. Should be back tonight. I'll give you the latest a little later on this hour. Soulja Boy was supposed to perform at FedEx Forum this weekend. Now he will not, presumably because of possible threats against him. A week ago, he seemed to suggest on video that he put $100,000 on Young Dolph's head on Wednesday. Probably heard Young Dolph was murdered. So there's some thought, just some thought, who knows whether it's real or not, but some thought that Soulja Boy might have played a role in this awful situation. And given that reality, it's probably not very safe for him to come to Memphis right now. So he will not. And I'll tell you more about that just before 5 o'clock. And Kyle Rittenhouse was found not guilty of all charges today up in Wisconsin. It should come as no surprise that the verdict is frustrating for much of America. I'll spend a couple minutes on that during four notable stories at 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calk is just like always, that I'll eventually do Dinner to Go, preview Dateline, spoil Dateline, and get on out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to, but I did want to start with the University of Memphis because it's a big night for our local Division I university. Penny Hardaway's basketball Tigers is going to be on the court against Western Kentucky at home. Ryan Silverfield's football Tigers going to be on the field against Houston on the road. Basketball game starts at 7. Tigers are 14.5-point favorites. You can stream it ESPN+. Football starts at 8. The Tigers are 9-point underdogs. You can watch it on ESPN2. What's wild about that, unsurprising but just interesting, is that in this market, correct me if I'm wrong, in this market, the basketball game clearly matters more.
Yeah, just because of the football season not going, you know, too great. Like, I mean, it's still, they have potential to have a good season, but it's just the game doesn't have as much meaning. I think if the Tigers, you know, had a chance to play for an AAC championship and there were some big stakes in this game, then it would definitely be bigger than the basketball game.
Sure. If Memphis were sitting here at, you know, instead of 5-5 at 8-2,
yeah,
with a chance to play in the AAC title game, you know, with a number beside their name, it would be bigger. I guess I would take issue with one small thing you said, that Memphis still has a chance to have a good season. I don't think they have still have a chance to have a good season. They have a chance to avoid a embarrassing season, to avoid a bad season. I don't think there's any scenario where Memphis, quote, has a good season, given that they're already sitting here with 5 losses.
I think if they were to win the next two or win one of the next two and get into a game against a relevant opponent in a bowl and win that game, I think people would consider it a good season.
Maybe. Okay, that's fair. I'll accept that as a possibility. But they are 9-point underdogs tonight.
Yeah.
So the most likely scenario is that they're 5-6 after tonight. The best case scenario is that they're 6-5. It's a season that lost its way a little while ago. Whereas the basketball program is 3-0, ranked 11th in the AP poll, and hopefully headed for something really nice. So maybe I'm just speaking for myself here, but I think I can speak for most when I say tonight, if you only could watch one, and most people have the ability to watch both.
Yes.
I'll watch both.
I'll watch both, too. But everyone calm down.
Everyone calm down. But if you only had the ability to watch one, I think most Memphis fans, Memphians, would watch the basketball game as opposed to the football game. Only problem being that some of the Memphians won't be able to find the basketball game because it's on ESPN+. And that's the larger point I was trying to make. Mm. In this market, I think the basketball game's bigger, but it's on ESPN+, and the football game's on ESPN2.
Yeah.
And that's just another reminder of how much bigger football is than basketball. More evidence of that, by the way. Tomorrow, there's the Hall of Fame Tip-Off Classic at the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. It's a doubleheader, number five Villanova against number 17 Tennessee, and number 6 Purdue against number 18 North Carolina. 2 games between top 20 teams, at least 3 projected first-round NBA draft picks on the court, and those games will be on ESPN News because it's a college football Saturday, and that is the treatment college basketball largely gets in the month of November. Anyway, back to tonight. Tiger basketball,
yep.
Tiger football. What if I told you only one of these teams is going to win tonight?
Mm-hmm.
You cannot have both win. Only one winner.
Okay.
Big Bet Bennett, which one are you letting win?
Definitely basketball, because there's so much ahead this season, and if you lose this game, it's also a game that you lost last year that kind of derailed your season early on. Now, Western Kentucky's not the same team, it appears, but Yeah, I just think that you lose this game tonight to Western Kentucky, you're going to drop in the rankings, and it just takes a little bit of steam out of the whole thing early on.
I don't think there's any question. If you're a Memphis fan and you can only have one win tonight for your university, you want it to be a basketball win as opposed to a football win, because a basketball loss hurts you a lot more than a football loss does at this point.
Now, if I was playing devil's advocate, I can't stand Houston, and I think a lot
you
of...
You always can't
I
stand
can't
people.
I stand Houston, what, and what, I think a
on,
lot of...
How on earth?
No,
let's
no,
stop
no.
here
Memphians
for a second.
Memphians agree with me on this. We don't like Houston,
who,
all right?
Who has strong feelings about Houston?
We don't like Houston, okay? All right?
Really?
Yes, we don't like Houston. They're leaving us. They're going to the Big 12. They think they're better than us.
Well, they might be.
And they, no, they're not. Trust me.
Well, I mean, the Big 12 thinks they are.
Well, their school doesn't even care about their sports teams, but whatever. Beating Houston is always awesome. I love beating Houston. I don't care about Western Kentucky at all.
Am I so out of touch that I don't recognize the Houston animosity in the Memphis market?
Maybe it's just me. I hate Houston. I hate the Houston Cougars. I hate the Houston Texans. Oh, I hate the Houston Astros. I hate the Houston Rockets, although they suck now. I'm not a Houston fan at all. So.
I don't think I've ever heard another Memphian. Now, keep in mind, I don't talk to many people. I sort of just live in my own little bubble. I don't really talk to a lot of people. But I don't think I've ever heard anybody say, a Memphian, I hate Houston.
I think that there's an underbelly, and I think we exist out there. Yeah.
There's a growing contingent of anti-Houston Memphians in this market.
You watch, if they beat Houston on national TV tonight in football, people get fired up about that.
Will they?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Promise.
It'll be close to midnight. People will be asleep.
No, it's Friday night. Let's go.
It's Friday night. Let's go. Uh-huh. I didn't realize people hated Houston this much. Even if that is a true thing, I still think you got to let the basketball team win.
Yeah.
Because right now you're on the verge of breaking into the top 10. You will be in the top 10 on Monday if you win this game. Because, you know, if nothing else, Michigan just took a bad loss at home to Seton Hall. Michigan's ahead of you. You're already 11th. Given the way the AP poll typically works, you're going to be a top 10 team on Monday as long as you avoid a bad result tonight. And you should be able to avoid a bad result tonight because, as you alluded to, Western Kentucky is just not good. They're 1-2 on the season. They beat Alabama State, lost to a Minnesota team with a first-year head coach, lost to a South Carolina team that's probably in its final year with its current head coach. So those are two bad losses. Western Kentucky started the season 90th at KenPom, and they've already, we're just on day 11 of the season, and they've already dropped 19 spots to 109. They lost three of the top four scorers from last season's team that beat Memphis, including Charles Bassey, who's just a monster, who now plays for the Philadelphia 76ers. Mm-hmm. Not a lot, but he's on the team. I think he's appeared.
NBA player. Yeah.
He's an NBA player. And so you should be able to handle this Western Kentucky team, if only because Minnesota handled them and South Carolina handled them. There's a reason why the Tigers are 14.5-point favorites, so hopefully they perform to expectations, win by double digits, remain undefeated, and then bounce into the top 10 of the AP poll come Monday. I'm looking forward to this personally because it'll be the first Memphis game where I'm not occupied, literally doing another job or flying through the air. You know, for the Tennessee Tech game, the season opener, I was at the Champions Classic. The NC Central game, I was flying home from New York. And the St. Louis game, I was doing sideline on North Carolina College of Charleston. So I haven't been able to watch a Memphis basketball game with focus in real time so far this season, and I'll get to do that tonight for the first time. So I'm looking forward to that. The two things I'll be watching for more than anything else, the turnovers and the rotations. We've talked a lot about the good stuff that is connected to Memphis basketball right now. Amani Bates looks great. Jalen Duren looks great. Landers Nolley seems to have accepted his role off as an off-the-bench scorer. They're shooting the ball well from three. They're overwhelming, suffocating defensively. There's a lot of good stuff there. the troubling stuff, or at least the possibly troubling stuff, is the rotations and the turnovers. You know, Memphis's current offensive turnover rate is 25.4%. We talked about this earlier in the week. That ranks 323rd nationally as of this moment. And what I did earlier this week, I believe it was on Wednesday, after the win over St. Louis, is I just went and explained to you how if your goal is to win a national championship, you cannot turn the ball over like this. National champions do not turn the ball over like this. And this isn't just a, well, it's early type of thing that you can point to with some teams. This is who Memphis has been. Last season, year before, they turned the ball over a lot. You know, the primary point guard right now is the same dude who was the primary point guard last season until he got hurt. They turned the ball over a lot. You can be really good turning the ball over a lot. You can't be a national champion if you do. I ran through it. Last season, Baylor won the national title. Their turnover rate was 16.5%. That ranked 54th in the country. Year before that, we didn't have a national champion, but in 2019 we did. It was Virginia. Turnover rate was only 14.7%. That was 12th in the country. 2018, our champion was Villanova. Turnover rate 15%, 14th in the country. Year before that, Carolina won the championship. Turnover rate 16.2%, 39th in the country. Year before that, Villanova, turnover rate 16.3%, that ranked 58th in the country. So the past five national champions have all had an offensive turnover rate of 16.5 or lower and an offensive turnover rate that ranks in the top 60 in the country. Memphis is 25.4, ranked 323rd in turnover rate.
Wow.
Got to clean that up.
Yes.
I'll be focused on that tonight. Can they clean it up? I'm not talking about cut it from 24 down to 8. Can you get it from 24 down to 15? Let's do baby steps.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get it from 24 down to 15? I could live with that. I think Penny Hardaway could live with that. Let's see what they do as it pertains to taking care of the ball tonight. The other thing, the rotations. I know Memphis plays fast, and I know there's a lot of different ways to win basketball games. Short rotations, deeper rotations, play fast, play slow, try to score in transition, try to score in half court, press, don't press, crash the boards, don't crash the boards. A lot of different ways to be good in college basketball. But if you listen to Penny Hardaway's press conferences or radio interviews or him talk whenever he talks, he is constantly saying things like, when I studied Villanova or when I studied the best teams in the country. He really pays attention to what the great teams in this sport are doing and perhaps doesn't try to replicate it, but he's at least aware of it. How many times have you heard him say that? I've noticed it several times. When I study this team or when I study these teams or when I study this, and he'll tell you what he found. Well, if he studies the best teams in the country when it comes to their rotations, what he will find is that nobody plays as many people as he plays, as many minutes as he plays them. Just to prove this point, I just went and grabbed the top five in the AP poll currently and looked at their rotations. Here's what I found. Number one, Gonzaga. Only 8 Gonzaga players are currently playing more than 9 minutes per game. Only 8. It's the number one team in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Only 8 Gonzaga players are averaging more than 9 minutes per game. UCLA is ranked number 2 right now. Only 9 UCLA players are averaging more than 9.3 minutes per game right now. Number 3 is Kansas. Only 9 Kansas players are averaging more than 5.7 minutes per game right now. Number 4 is Michigan. Only 8 Michigan players are averaging more than 6.5 minutes per game right now. Number 5 is Villanova. Only 8 Villanova players are averaging more than 6.5 minutes per game right now. Last year's national champion, Baylor, only 9 Baylor players averaged more than 4.5 minutes per game last season. Right now, Memphis has 10 players averaging at least 11 minutes per game. That's excessive. It's not like any other great team in the country. It's not like our last national champion. What the evidence shows you is that in college basketball, you need to have around 8 or 9, only about 8 or 9, playing more than about 6, 7, 8, 9 minutes per game. That's your normal rotation. Now, in fairness, it's worth pointing out, Memphis is trying to play faster than all of these teams. Mm. So maybe you can stretch it a little bit. But using 10 guys at least 11 minutes per game is not typically a recipe for success in college basketball. That's what the evidence shows. Penny knows his team better than I. That staff knows that team better than I. But Penny did say in the preseason he wanted to play 9 guys. So far he's playing 10, at least 11 minutes per game. Does he plan to tighten that up? If so, does it start tonight? It's worth watching, and among the things I'll be looking for when Memphis and Western Kentucky tip off a little after 7 o'clock inside FedEx Forum. I'll talk more about it with Jeff Calkins at 5 o'clock. When we come back, Dan Wolkin from USA Today. You're listening to The Gary Parrish Show. We're on 92.9 FM ESPN.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview, presented by The Wing Guru, online at thewingguru.com.
Dan, I want to start with a column you wrote about this ongoing situation in the world of tennis involving a young woman named Peng Shuai, who recently accused a former government official, if I have it right, of sexual assault, and now she is missing in a way that is obviously a pretty scary situation. I know that's a surface-level explanation for what's going on. I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, basically her accusation was on social media for about 10 or 12 minutes before it was censored by the Chinese government. And in China, they've got their own sort of social media networks that are monitored and all that stuff. And, you know, any mention of her basically seems to get taken down. CNN, has an international feed. When they've put the story on, it goes to black in China. And when this started to become a thing that people paid attention to, there was a email sent and disseminated by the Chinese state media basically saying, oh, you know, this is Peng Shuai, I'm fine. What was posted wasn't true. I'm healthy, I'm safe, everything's good. And that just raised even more red flags because, like, that's just not believable. That's not something that would happen. So now this has really caught on, and it's become this major international story outside of tennis. And the WTA, which has had this very important relationship with China, they host a lot of tournaments there, including their final tournament of the year, the WTA Finals, which is a massive amount of money. In Shenzhen, basically the WTA is threatening to just walk away from China, and they're saying, we don't believe you, we need her safety guaranteed, and we're willing to, if necessary, pull all of our business out of your country unless you can guarantee us where she is and that she's not being harmed.
And you wrote a column that you described on Twitter this way: if women's tennis has the courage to walk away from Chinese money, the rest of the sports world can too. You know, this is one where I know that sometimes the left and the right can literally argue about anything, and the right has sort of taken on the anti-China position. And this is one where I find myself more in line with that. You know, fundamentally speaking, right is right, wrong is wrong. And some of the things that are happening in China and have been happening in China are deplorable. And too many of our sports leagues, I think perhaps most prominently the NBA, sort of turned a blind eye to that in a way that I think is regrettable. And the point you make in the column is that, you know, everybody likes Chinese money, but it's unclear if we all need Chinese money. And if the women's tennis tour is willing to you know, lose a lot of prize money potential by walking away, then why couldn't the NBA or any other league that does business in that country do the same thing? And I think it's a completely reasonable point to make.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think this is a left-right issue. I think everyone is basically in agreement about this. I don't think there's a lot of disagreement between ideologies here in the United States. And this is not just a sports thing. Like, a few years ago, there was a story about somebody who works, I think, for Marriott and referencing Taiwan as an independent country on social media. And, of course, that, you know, makes China go crazy, and they came down on Marriott. And it's been an issue with airlines about how they, you know, list Taipei in their flight, you know, manifests or whatever. I mean, so this goes to all sectors of business and Western society, and everyone has to sort of navigate how much they can tolerate. And the reality is, for sports, they try to put out these statements that kind of, you know, say what they want to say, but not directly, not enough to make the Chinese government really mad. And then it sort of blows over and everyone moves on. And you're seeing this exactly happen with the International Olympic Committee, which is hosting in Winter Olympics in Beijing in a couple months. And it just seems to me to be a completely untenable way to do things. And look, women's tennis, like I mentioned earlier, the time between the U.S. Open and the end of the season, they basically parked their tour in China, or at least they did before the pandemic. And it was worth a lot of money, you know, for the players to go play there. And just as an example, the season-ending WTA Finals had a $14 million purse in Shenzhen. They had to move it this year to Guadalajara, Mexico, and the prize money was $5 million, that basically a third of what they could have made in Japan. And so tennis, and women's tennis in particular, cannot make up that large chunk of their revenue anywhere else in the world. You know, for the NBA or some of these other places, China represents a piece of their business, but it is a small piece, relatively speaking. For women's tennis, this is not a small matter. And for them to take this stand, I think, shows the way that other sports basically just need to make a choice. We're either going to be a part of truth or we're going to tolerate lies. And women's tennis, at least, has said they're not going to tolerate lies.
Talking to Dan Wolkin from USA Today, one last thing on this. I know we don't know anything for sure, but what is the perception in tennis circles or among people who understand how things work in China? Do we believe Peng Shuai is alive, okay, or are we fearful of the worst?
Well, nobody really knows exactly what's going on. And so it would all just be speculation at this point. You know, the Chinese Tennis Federation has communicated to the WTA Tour that she's safe, that she's alive. You know, the email that was supposedly sent from her, was it really her? Was it somebody in the government writing that email under her name? Did she write it but was coerced to write it? You know, there's just no telling what's going on with her family. Because, you know, she knew when she posted that what the reaction was going to be, what the stakes were, what the potential blowback was. Certainly she understood all of that. But what's happened since runs the gamut in terms of what people fear and what they're speculating about. And, you know, hopefully at some point we'll have answers.
Let's go to college football. It is the time of the year, and I saw you mention this on Twitter earlier in the week, where things can really get wild on social media, especially with this report and that report. And some reports come from reputable people, and other reports come from, let's just say, lesser-known people, and it all gets twisted, and nobody knows what's fact and fiction. I say all that to say, at some point this week, a radio host in South Florida said that if Miami's job opens and they target Lane Kiffin, Lane Kiffin will be the next head coach at Miami. You are connected in this industry. Do you put any validity behind that report?
Not a ton, really. You know, I think everyone knows that Lane likes South Florida. He was there in Boca Raton at FAU. And certainly it's an appealing prospect, him recruiting that area, trying to be the guy who gets Miami back to prominence. And I would not totally discount the possibility that something like that could happen. But I also think that Ole Miss has got, I don't want to say unlimited resources, but they have whatever resources it would take to try to keep him or at least make sure that they weren't outbid by a Miami. You know, I think the other question is, does he end up in the mix for LSU or some of these other jobs? I just think there's a lot of different possibilities out there potentially for Lane, and the idea that he, because he personally likes Miami, that's where he would want to go. I don't know that I necessarily buy that 100%, or that it would be a, you know, quote unquote done deal if they came after him. I think there's a lot more between here and there that would have to be sorted out.
A lot of people have spent decades talking about bringing the U back. It's obviously more difficult than it must seem to some people. How good is the Miami job now? Is bringing the U back, is that a real thing, or is it like bringing Nebraska football back? Like, yeah, it was something else once upon a time, but you know, these ain't those times.
I think it's hard to do now. Back in the 80s and even in the 90s, to an extent, recruiting just wasn't as national as it is now. Now, look, I think it's a disgrace when you look at the rivals' rankings of the state of Florida the last few years, and you look at how many of the top 20 guys are going to Florida, Florida State, or Miami, really. It's not what it should be. I do think there's a opening for somebody who's really competent and really connected in recruiting to go to any of those three schools and start to clean up a little bit in the state of Florida, and specifically in Miami-Dade and Fort Lauderdale. But I don't think that it's going to be like the 80s. I just think that the resource gap is real between Miami and other schools, between the ACC and the SEC. I don't think you're going to ever have, you know, the facilities that some of these schools have. You're not going to have the support. You still have the issue of playing at Hard Rock Stadium, which is, you know, a good hour from campus, and it's a pro stadium that doesn't have the same atmosphere. Like, there's real obstacles, but Miami's also just whiffed on their last few hires. I think they can get somebody to be very good and competitive and at least make them relevant nationally and in the ACC, but the days of we're going to be the U and we're going to win five national championships, I think that's probably over.
Wrapping up here with Dan Wolkin from USA Today. Last thing before I let you go, it appears Mel Tucker is going to remain at Michigan State thanks to a 10-year, $95 million contract. Listen, the guy is obviously doing a tremendous job there, having an incredible year, but how much of a gamble is it to give $95 million guarantee to somebody who's really only in his second year, on campus at your job, and the first year was a pandemic-shortened season in which you went 2-5?
Yeah, it's certainly a contract offer that, assuming it's real, that got a lot of people's attention and raised eyebrows. And everyone, I think, likes Mel Tucker and thinks he's really good, but you do have to take a step back and say, what's his career record? I mean, he's basically in three seasons as a head coach, roughly 500 or a little bit over 500. This is now the guy who's potentially going to be one of the top three highest paid coaches in college football. I mean, it just seems ridiculous. Having said that, like, if you're Michigan State, where else are you going to turn to maintain the level that you're at if not Mel Tucker? He basically, if you don't pony up that kind of money, somebody else will offer him something similar and potentially a better job where it's easier to win national titles. So I don't know that they have a lot of choice. If they have the resources, if they can get their donors to pony up that kind of money, I think we kind of have to do it or else he's gone. So that's just kind of the weird economics of the sport right now, and Mel's just in a position where he's going to be able to take advantage of it in a pretty monstrous way.
It's wild. That's Dan Wolkin from USA Today. Make sure you're reading him, usatoday.com. Find him on Twitter, at Dan Walken. Thanks, buddy. Have a good weekend.
All right. See you, GP.
Grizzlies beat the Clippers last night, 120-108. Ja Morant got 28. Grizz are back above 500. We'll talk NBA next. You listen to the Gary Parrish Show. We're on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Okay, now they got me wanna rap again. Heal the wound and then you stab me in my back again. You the type to play the joke and try to hide your hand. Not the type to come around and try to play your friend. You the type to cut the grass and snake your bestest man. I'm the type to close the deal and cut my then. See me in person, I look like a ghost. See me in person, I look like a ghost. Boom. You wanna come in and play with the goat? Boom. You wanna come in and play with the goat?
Goat body.
Are you rap? Sound like me, can't tell who is who. You got no real identity, can't tell you from you. Price went up,
yeah.
Angel investor,
yeah.
Price went up, Angel investor.
Okay. Memphis known for its barbecue, but only one Memphis area restaurant actually serves world championship barbecue, and that's Memphis Barbecue Company. It's owned by Melissa Cookston. She's a 7-time world champion, more than Michael Jordan. She's won more world championships than Air Jordan, for crying out loud. First woman ever inducted into the Barbecue Hall of Fame, another Hall of Fame Michael Jordan is not in. Talented guy, undeniably, not in the Barbecue Hall of Fame. So if you're in the mood for barbecue, you know where to go. But if you're not in the mood for barbecue, you can also go there because they've got a menu that's going to include a lot of stuff that falls outside of the traditional barbecue umbrella. In other words, you want a salad, you can get a salad. You want a burger, they got burgers. Sandwiches, catfish, salmon, grilled chicken, chicken tenders, meatloaf, smoked wings. Even if you're not in the mood for barbecue, they're going to have something for you at Memphis Barbecue Company. It's the holiday season. Thanksgiving's next week. You could call right now and order your double smoked spiral sliced ham. Each one comes with reheating instructions and a house-made glaze. 662-536-3763 is the number. 662-536-3763. You can order online at memphisbbqco.com. Get curbside pickup. Or again, call the store. You can arrange catering for family and friends this busy holiday season. 662-536-3763. Get all the information on the web, memphisbbqco.com, memphisbbqco.com. Jeff Cogg is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock. I'm going to preview and spoil Dateline before we get out of here. But right now, I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four stories at 444. Brought to you by Delta Dental of Tennessee. Covering your smile. Four notable stories at 444. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's four notable stories at 444. Story number one.
Two-game winning streak for the Grizzlies. Last night, 120-108 inside FedEx Forum. They handle the Clippers. Ja Morant, another impressive performance. 13 of 21 from the field, 2 of 5 from 3. He got 28 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, and a steal. And did you see this graphic getting passed around today about who has scored more points in the paint this season,
yes,
than anybody else in the NBA?
Mm-hmm.
It's the little bitty point guard for the Memphis Grizzlies, Ja Morant, which shows you just how much basketball has changed. Like in a different era, that guy would be Shaquille O'Neal or
right.
Patrick Ewing or Hakeem Olajuwon. But now, post-up is basically a thing of the past. Remember Rick Carlisle getting into it with a media member either last year or the year before when he was still the head coach in Dallas, who was asking, like, why doesn't Kristaps Porzingis post up more? You know, he's 7'1", and it's sort of a traditional way of thinking about basketball. And Carlisle was trying to be polite, I think, but he was basically, in the nicest way possible, saying, you just don't understand. We have all the data. There's no value in posting him up. That's not where the value is. The value is him top of the key bombing. There's no value in him posting up. And with the way basketball is played today, you don't want to throw the ball to a big on the, you know, on the post, in the post too often. So bigs aren't scoring in the paint as often. You know who's scoring in the paint? Aggressive attacking point guards who can finish. And that is Ja Morant. Ja retweeted that graphic earlier today and more or less said, when I was coming out of college, people said I wouldn't be able to finish at the rim. Looks like I'm doing okay. And he is doing okay. And he's sort of changed the way that he finishes at the rim. You remember when he was a rookie, he was trying to dunk everything.
Yeah.
He doesn't do that as much anymore.
No, I mean, last night, like, Zubats, who's become a pretty good big in the NBA, like, there was multiple times when Ja just elevated over that dude and just had a little floater right over his head. And, like, that's what he's doing.
He's become a smarter player when it comes to, okay, I'm at the rim. What am I trying to do now? Smarter in the sense that he's more efficient in the way that he scores, and smarter in the sense that he's not getting sent to the floor as often. Like, he used to get knocked down a lot.
Yeah, for sure. There.
And, you know, that will still happen from time to time. And he'll try to punch one on somebody every once in a while. But he tries it less, and he's now literally scoring more at the rim than anybody else in the NBA. So the Grizz are now 8-7, back above 500. That's good enough for alone in seventh in the West, just a game behind the Clippers and Nuggets. So, you know, that three-game losing streak they went through felt really bad.
Yeah.
But then, you know, they got to play Houston, and that's always fun. And then they knock out the Clippers last night. So now they're just a game out of fifth. You know, it's still early in the season, so everybody or most teams are kind of bunched together. But they're in seventh right now, but just a game out of fifth, just a game and a half out of fourth, just two games out of third. And next up is going to be a game tomorrow night at Minnesota. And then the schedule upticks a little bit.
Yeah, and Minnesota, that's not as easy as people might think tomorrow night. They've won a couple in a row. They're 6-9. Like, they're playing pretty decent basketball. They went and won at L.A.
Well, you just never know when Carl Anthony Towns is going to destroy you. Or when Anthony Edwards is going to go for 35.
He's been good, yep.
You know, like, they got the type of high-end talent. Not a great team, not even a good team. Mm. But they got the type of talent that can, one of them can go off on you and cause real problems.
They should have beat the Grizzlies at FedEx Forum. Sure. So, yeah.
Yeah, so you got at Minnesota, that's tomorrow night. And then at Utah, obviously tough. Toronto at home, Atlanta at home, Sacramento at home, then at Toronto. They're basically going to be playing every other day for a significant amount of time coming up. And so hopefully the wins outnumber the losses by a significant margin.
Story number two.
Big game tonight, at least, you know, in terms of marquee franchises, Lakers and Celtics. And our king, LeBron James, is expected to make his return. He's only played in six of the Lakers' 16 games so far this season. He's got an abdominal strain. He's going to be a game-time decision. That's what Frank Vogel said earlier today. But all indications are LeBron James will return to the court tonight. And, boy, do they need him.
You ain't kidding.
They stink.
They really do. Like I said, I mean, they lost to Minnesota at home. I think they lost to maybe the Spurs or someone like that. Like, they are not good right now.
No, they're 8-8, and so, you know, still just a half game behind the Grizzlies. We could do the same thing we just did. You know, half game behind the Grizzlies, game and a half behind the Clippers and Nuggets. It's, you know, everybody's bunched together because we're just, depending on the team, 15, 16 games into this thing. But they have really been performing poorly in the absence of LeBron. And I saw, like, where Russell Westbrook and Anthony Davis, in terms of meeting a certain threshold of minutes played, have like the two of the worst plus minuses in the entire NBA. And the leader right now in plus minus is Steph Curry, who is also now in the betting markets, the leader to win MVP. He would become a three-time MVP if he could get that done. But Lakers-Celtics tonight on national TV, LeBron expected to play.
Story number three.
It was announced last night that the Millennium Tour 2021 is going to not allow Soulja Boy to perform this weekend in St. Louis and Memphis. The release read this way: in response to the tragic shooting death of rap artist Young Dolph, the Millennium Tour 2021 tour promoter G Squared Events has determined that rapper Soulja Boy will not perform during this weekend's tour stops in St. Louis and Memphis. To preserve the safety of the Millennium Tour 2021 artists and patrons, tour representatives are exercising caution and want to make a smart decision to be safe.
Mm.
Seems like a smart decision to me.
Yeah, kind of interesting that they just came flat out and said that's why he's not going to be doing it.
Well, perhaps there's an investigator listening right now who does know where this is headed, and whether Soulja Boy was involved or not, either intentionally or unintentionally. But right now, we don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And Soulja Boy did tweet earlier today, what's his death got to do with me? Well, the problem, of course, is that, you know, roughly a week ago, on video, he seemed to suggest that he had $100,000 on Dolph's head.
Yep.
And then Dolph, a week later, is dead.
Very true.
It's if nothing else, a bad timing.
Very bad timing. Now, I will say that if you have followed him on social media at all, he threatens a lot of people.
He's wild.
Like, he's pretty wild. I mean, he threatens everybody. So I'll just throw that out there. But, yeah, it is not a good look.
He's a little bit like Tekashi in that he's just wild. Although it feels like Tekashi sort of calmed down a little bit.
Well, you know, the whole, like, jail and... Yeah.
But he's out of jail.
I know. Well, that maybe not having to go to jail made him reconsider some things.
I don't know, but he came out of jail still acting wild. But I just thought about this in this moment.
Right,
I haven't seen him acting wild lately. Every once in a while,
either. That's
every once
a good
in a while, stuff would like pop up onto my timeline or somewhere or be on TMZ. Like Tekashi just said this, and Tekashi just did that. I haven't seen any of that lately. But Soulja Boy is wild.
Yes.
And so when we talked to Devin Steele yesterday, Devin was like, "I hope he was just talking wild, and there's nothing to it." But he did strongly suggest that he had $100,000 on Dolph's head, and then Dolph was dead a week later, shot in broad daylight. A clear ambush targeted hit on him.
Yes.
And so, listen, I'm not going to pretend to know how this thing might have gone down, but you know, if you just want to play hypotheticals here, there's a chance that Soulja Boy was being sincere, and somebody was like, "I'll collect this $100,000. I can get him for $100,000. Pop, 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 pop." There's also, I guess it runs the possibility of, yo, Soulja Boy said he's got $100,000 for whoever does this. Let's do it. Like, you know, and Soulja Boy's like, yo, I was just kidding. I mean, I don't know how this stuff goes.
Mm-hmm.
I just know that it's wildly unfortunate timing if you're actually not involved for the guy to get murdered in broad daylight a week after you said you got $100,000 on his head. And so whether Soulja Boy had anything to do with this or not, I bet you there's somebody in the city who thinks he does, who believes that he did.
For sure. And, oh, I mean, you see that on social media.
And so do you want to be walking around the city? Do you want to be on stage? Would you feel safe even on stage inside FedEx Forum? I wouldn't.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, you got to go through a metal detector to get in there, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but like, you know, people sneak stuff into places all the time.
It's true.
And, you know, even if it's not if I was Soulja Boy, I wouldn't want to be in Memphis right now.
Right.
Let me put it that way.
Agreed.
If I was Soulja Boy, I would not want to be in Memphis right now. So he's not going to be in Memphis. And he's acting as if this was their call, not his, and he's still getting paid. And that may be true. But if it wasn't their call and it was me, I would have been on the phone with them like, "Hey, if you guys don't mind, I'd like to sit this one out. I don't think I need to be in Memphis, you know, a few days after Young Dolph was murdered." So if you were hoping to see Soulja Boy this weekend at FedEx Forum, you're going to have to, you're just not going to be able to do that.
Story number four.
Kyle Rittenhouse, who fatally shot two men and wounded another amid protest and rioting over police conduct in Kenosha, Wisconsin, was found not guilty of homicide and other charges today in a deeply divisive case that ignited a national debate over vigilantism, gun rights, and the definition of self-defense. This has obviously been the big headline in our country today, so much so that President Biden has to speak on it. It is dominating social media. I've just sort of stayed out of it because I don't know that I have anything unique to say, other than I was not surprised by this verdict. If you followed the case at all, it seemed to be heading this direction. It's still disappointing, but unsurprising. And I guess in the spirit of just keeping it simple, I would point this out. Even if you are...
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.